Now, I want to touch on some of these great things that we have here, because there are great things that we have in this particular chapter. And first of all, will you note verse 1? Verse 1 now, chapter 19 of Isaiah, the burden of Egypt, that is the judgment of Egypt. Behold, the Lord rideth upon a swift cloud, and shall come into Egypt, and the idols of Egypt shall be moved at his presence, and the heart of Egypt shall melt in the midst of it. Now, the chief target of God's condemnation and charge against Egypt was idolatry. We'll pick this up again when we get to Ezekiel, because another one of the most remarkable prophecies is in Ezekiel, where God said that every idol would disappear from Egypt. And Egypt had as many idols as Babylon did. Babylon was the fountainhead of idolatry, but Egypt certainly made its contribution. And I think that Paul's statement in Romans 1, 21 through 23, probably fits Egypt more than any other nation. Will you notice this? Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations. Their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Now, history bears testimony to the fact that Egypt was originally monotheistic, that is, they worshipped one God. But they gradually lapsed into the basest sort of idolatry, where every creature under heaven was worshipped. The bull, the frog, the scarab, or the bug, the fish, and all sorts of birds. And when Moses was ready to deliver Egypt, God had to carry on a warfare, which he was glad to do. I call it the battle of the gods, when Moses brought down the plagues upon Egypt. Now, each one of those plagues was directed against one of the idols of Egypt. And the Lord Jehovah struck at all forms of idolatry in Egypt, all the way from the sun in the heavens to the Nile River, and to the frogs and the lice that were in the land. Now, he comes down again in a cloud like a chariot to destroy the idols of Egypt. And it's interesting to know that idolatry has long since disappeared from that land, though the people dwell in the ignorance and superstition of the Muslim religion. And I've been over there twice, and I tell you, there's no darkness like the darkness in the land of Egypt, and this has been fulfilled literally. Verse 2, I will set the Egyptians against the Egyptians. They shall fight everyone against his brother, everyone against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom. Now, there were several pharaohs arose about the time of Isaiah. They could no longer control this great kingdom, and the army no longer obeyed them. People no longer respected them. And this caused the setting up of weak city-states that were self-governing for a period of time. That's where you have up the River Nile, Thebes, and the other great Karnak, the other great cities that were in that section. And then there was a breakup again, Memphis. We know it in the scriptures, Noph, and so on. Now, verse 3, and the spirit of Egypt shall fail in the midst thereof. I will destroy the counsel thereof. They shall seek to the idols, to the charmers, and to them that have familiar spirits, and to the wizards. Now, this proud nation that advanced civilization so far, and there's probably not a nation under the sun today that does not owe a great deal to the civilization of Egypt. Now, these people turned to idols, And they finally, in desperation, resorted to spiritism. And you find at the time of Moses, for instance, that the magicians were called in. And they actually could duplicate some of the miracles of Moses. There came a time when they couldn't duplicate and they fled, but at first they did it, which reveals the fact that they were not fakers. They actually had satanic power. Now, verse 3, the spirit of Egypt shall fail, you see. And then in verse 4, and the Egyptians will I give over into the hand of a cruel lord, and a fierce king shall rule over them, saith the Lord of hosts. Now, this cruel lord is specifically one that is mentioned in history as Psammetichus, who rose about the 9th century B.C., but also the Ottoman Turk that came in. And then there came in the Hyksos kings out from the desert. They were nomads, Bedouin princes. And for a time they ruled in Egypt. And that was actually before this period, before Isaiah, because it was when Joseph went down. The Hyksos kings were then in power. So Egypt has had that experience. This all has been literally fulfilled. Verse 5, and the waters shall fail from the sea, and the river shall be wasted and dried up. Now, here are specific prophecies that are quite remarkable. Now, the sea here refers to the river Nile, because it was the main artery of the nation, and it was a large body of water. And because of that, why, it's spoken of here as the sea. Now, the rivers here are the canals that were built, especially down around the mouth of the river. And that mouth had to be kept open. That delta area had to be kept open in that day because so much of soil was coming down, and they were able to keep it open and had to keep it open. It's true of the Mississippi Delta today. Now, verse 6, they shall turn the rivers far away. That is, the canals and the brooks of defense shall be emptied and dried up. The reeds and flags shall wither. Now, this is something that is quite interesting, that even today, those brooks, that is, those outlets to the sea there at the delta, are filled up. And all vegetation, that was a wonderful place like the Garden of Eden. And it's not that today by any means. And those that have been to the land of Egypt are rather amazed to notice how that irrigation has done such wonders, and that you find nothing growing along the banks of the River Nile, that is to speak of. You don't have great forests and a great deal of foliage that you have around all other rivers. Now listen what God said specifically. The paper reeds by the brooks, by the mouth of the brook, and everything sown by the brook shall wither, be driven away, and be no more. Now, the paper reeds are the papyrus. Now, in that day, it was a great industry. In fact, Egypt became a wealthy nation because papyrus was the writing material of man. After the clay tablets, it was papyrus. And the Phoenicians had scattered this all over the world, that is, the Mediterranean world or the civilized world, and papyrus was raised along the Nile River. Well, you don't find it there today. It's disappeared. Now, if you go to the museum there, out in front in the pool they've got there, the fountain, you'll find papyrus. And then some of the wealthy homes, especially the British, quite a colony of British that live in Cairo today. And you find in many of their homes, they raise the papyrus. But today it's sort of a luxury plant and no longer the common plant that grew in that day. God said it would cease. Now, friends, you can make of that anything you want to. It ceased, though. And you can explain it your way. But God says it's going to cease. I believe that he had a little something to do with it. Verse 8, the fishers also shall mourn, and all they that cast angle into the brook shall lament, and they that spread nets upon the water shall languish. Now, another great industry in Egypt was fish. Remember the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt, they missed the fish when they got out on the desert. Also the leeks, onions, and garlic. They wanted the fish. And God gave them flesh to eat, you'll recall, out there, the quail. And very frankly, they didn't care too much for quail on toast. They much preferred the fish in Egypt. Well, now that's disappeared. Now, I particularly watch for this. I don't think I saw over two or three people fishing on the River Nile. Oh, there's fish there, but it's no longer an industry. And the fact of the matter is, if you go down to Florida, you see them by the hundreds along the canals fishing there. You don't see them in Egypt fishing like that. Now, God said it would disappear. It's disappeared. Now, moreover, they that work in fine flax and they that weave networks shall be confounded. That'll disappear. Now, Egypt raised flax, and they had the finest linen. In fact, it's not even excelled or surpassed by the linen in Ireland today. I think that to the pound that they get about 180,000 feet of strands, but in Egypt they got 300,000. That is almost twice the amount. It was very much like silk, and it is said that a fisherman could take a net made of that fine twine, byssus linen, and pull it through the ring that was on his hand. And it was this linen that went into the building of the tabernacle down in the wilderness by the nation of Israel. They had brought out that fine twine, byssus linen. Now, that industry has totally disappeared. Now, the entire fishing industry would disappear. God says in verse 10, they shall be broken in their purposes thereof, all that make sluices and ponds for fish. Now, Egypt's wealth, as Dr. Jennings has put it, as already said, practically consists in a river because of its volume here. It's called a sea. Now, all that's disappeared. Not only that, the princess of Zoan, and Zoan is Tunis, the council of the wise council of Pharaohs, and he says those princes are fools. Now, what has happened? The royal line of the Pharaohs, they intermarried so much. Actually, brother married sister, and it produced an offspring of morons. And that was the line that went down in Egypt. And God says the princes of Tunis are become fools, and the princes of Noph or Memphis, they're deceived, and they've also seduced Egypt. And you know the sordid story of Cleopatra, however, she was Greek and not really an Egyptian at all, but they came to power, you see, later on. Now he says, verse 15, neither shall there be any work for Egypt which the head or tail, branch or rush may do. There would be now, notice what he says, the failure of false religion, the failure of material resources, and the failure of mental and spiritual power. It would all go. Now that's disappeared, and we'll find in another prophecy later on that Egypt would become a base kingdom. All you have to do is to go to Cairo to have that confirmed. Now, we have in verse 16 the future, in that day. Now, we've already seen this is a technical term used by Isaiah, and it looks to the future, it looks to the day of the Lord. In that day shall Egypt be like unto women, it shall be afraid. That will be their condition when they go into the great tribulation period. Verse 17, the land of Judah shall be a terror unto Egypt. Somebody's going to try to say that's being fulfilled today, but I don't think that you can quite say that. You do not have the qualifications of fulfillment in what we see today. Everyone that maketh mention thereof shall be afraid in himself because of the counsel of the Lord of hosts. When will that take place? Verse 19, in that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof, and it shall be a sign. Now, an altar to the Lord has been interpreted by some of the cults as the pyramid. Well, the pyramid is neither an altar, it's not a pillar, it's a monstrous mausoleum for the burying of a king and his queen, and that's all in the world it ever was. What would be a sign? What would be an end sign? What would be that? Well, it's nothing in the world but the cross of Christ, my friend. And we have here in verse 22, and the Lord shall smite Egypt, he shall smite and heal it, and they shall return even to the Lord, he shall be entreated of them. Egypt has a glorious future, and this nation will enter and enjoy the kingdom with Israel. That doesn't look like the present hour, does it not? Only God could do this. Verse 24, in that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, and Assyria is to be restored. Now, this is a great passage of Scripture here.